In our last lecture, we looked at one of the central debates in modern Orthodox history, whether the movement experienced a clear shift to the right in the late 20th century. We saw that the reality was more complicated. Alongside some rightward movement, greater emphasis on rabbinic authority, yeshiva learning, and stricter communal halachic standards, there were also strong countercurrents pushing for greater openness, experimentation, and inclusion. Women's tefillah groups became the key case study in that tension. They showed how even when new ideas did not become mainstream, they still shaped the conversation and forced the community to clarify its boundaries. We also ended with a broader conclusion. Modern Orthodoxy is not defined by a simple movement in one direction. It is defined by holding multiple, often conflicting goals at the same time. Commitment to halacha on the one hand, and engagement with the modern world and broader Jewish community on the other. Rather than resolving that tension, modern Orthodoxy continually manages it. With that in mind, we now turn to the 1990s, a period when the same tension became even more visible. In the 1990s, there was a push to move modern Orthodoxy in both directions at once, some trying to make it more open, while others trying to reinforce boundaries and strengthen tradition. After the era of Rav Soloveitchik, there was a sense among some that modern Orthodoxy had become increasingly defensive and had shifted too far to the right. In 1997, Eida was founded by Rabbi Saul Berman. Its motto was the courage to be modern and orthodox. Rabbi Berman argued that modern orthodoxy needed a clearer voice, one that fully embraced halacha while also engaging seriously with modern culture. Eida sought to champion Torah Umada and engagement with secular knowledge, religious Zionism, greater opportunities for women's Torah study, and participation within halacha, intellectual openness, honest discussion of difficult issues, and greater cooperation and dialogue across the Jewish community while remaining fully Orthodox. In 1999, Eida held its first conference, which drew about 1,500 participants. It included figures such as Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, Blue Greenberg, Rabbi Mark Angel, and Rabbi Michael Broyd. In many ways, Eida became a space for conversations that were difficult to have in more mainstream Orthodox settings, including women's ritual participation, halachic prenups, religious authority and autonomy, relations with non-Orthodox Jews, and questions about Zionism and democracy. One of Eida's most lasting contributions was the Eida Journal, which published serious scholarly and ideological work on contemporary Orthodox issues. It provided a forum for topics that were often underrepresented in mainstream Orthodox publications. Including women in Jewish law, Torah Umada, and pluralism. Critics, however, argued that Eida was unnecessarily divisive and that some of its positions crossed accepted Orthodox boundaries. After the 1999 conference, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein wrote a detailed response in the foreword in which he warned that some presentations were selectively using Rav Soloveitchik's legacy while they highlighted his openness to modern culture. He often left out his deep commitment to halacha, traditional authority, and spiritual seriousness. Rav Lichtenstein argued that the Rav's deepest identity came from the traditional, brisker world of Torah and halacha, not from his exposure to modern philosophy in Berlin. Although the Rav engaged deeply with secular culture, he remained strongly committed to halacha, traditional prayer, chazal, and the idea that Judaism cannot simply be reduced to historical or social forces. He also warned that one of modern Orthodoxy's greatest weaknesses is often a lack of depth. While it engages well with the broader world, it can sometimes fall short of Torah learning, religious commitment, and spiritual seriousness. The Rav, he argued, was deeply critical of that tendency. Ultimately, Rav Lichtenstein's message was that if people want to invoke the Rav's authority, they need to take the full picture, not just the parts that support their position. In his view, Eida risked turning the Rav into a symbol for contemporary causes rather than presenting the full complexity of his thought. By 2006, Eida's leaders concluded that its mission had largely run its course and that financial constraints also played a role in its closure. Many of its ideas and conversations continued in other frameworks, including Yeshivat Chovei Torah, and Rabbi Berman later joined that yeshiva. Eida can therefore be seen as a bridge between classical modern orthodoxy and what later became known as open orthodoxy. Yeshivat Chovei Torah, founded in 1999 by Rabbi Avi Weiss, emerged from a related set of concerns. Rabbi Weiss believed that American Orthodoxy was becoming too narrow and too cautious, and was losing some of its earlier openness to the broader world. He argued that rabbis needed not only strong Torah and halachic training, but also skills in pastoral care, leadership, and engagement with contemporary challenges. From his perspective, modern Orthodoxy needed to be more welcoming, more engaged with the broader Jewish community, more open to expanded opportunities for women within halacha, and more willing to interact constructively with the modern world. Yeshivat Chovei Torah presented itself not as a break from Orthodoxy, but as a renewal from within it. Over time, however, it became associated with what later came to be called open Orthodoxy, especially because of its positions on women's leadership and broader questions of Orthodox boundaries. Alongside Yeshivat Chovei Torah, other institutions were developed with similar goals. The International Rabbinic Fellowship, founded in 2007 by Rabbi Avi Weiss and Rabbi Mark Angel, created a professional association for rabbis aligned with this more open approach. It also reflected tensions around institutional authority, especially regarding graduates of Yeshivat Chovei Torah, because they were not accepted in the RCA, the Rabbinical Council of America. There were also issues relating to the standards of the RCA, namely the Bet Din of America, regarding conversion, which many rabbis from the IRF took a different position on, how much Kabbalah's and mitzvahs, how much acceptance of mitzvahs is necessary for a conversion to take place. So that was another point of contention, which led to the creation of this professional association of rabbis. And also, women were also included, members in the IRF. Another major organization was JOFA, founded in 1997 by Blue Greenberg and others, to advocate for expanded opportunities for women within halacha. Its central idea is captured in Blue Greenberg's famous phrase, "When there's a rabbinic will, there is a halachic way." JOFA became associated with efforts to expand women's participation in ritual and communal life, including Megillah reading, synagogue leadership, and later discussions about ordination. In 2009, Rabbi Avi Weiss and Rabbi Daniel Sperber ordained Rabbi Sarah Hurwitz, the first woman to receive Orthodox smicha under the title of Rabbah. That same year, Yeshivat Marat was founded to train women for Orthodox leadership roles. And graduates later served in various rabbinic and spiritual positions under different titles. Some were Rabbi, Rabbah, Maharat, Rabbanit, different titles. In response to this, the Rabbinical Council of America responded in 2015 with a resolution prohibiting members from ordaining women or appointing them to rabbinic positions in Orthodox institutions. Already in their April 2010 convention, the RCA already said that that they cannot accept either the ordination of women or the recognition of women as members of the Orthodox rabbinate, regardless of the title. That's right after Marat began. In 2013, the RCA announced that in light of the recent announcement that Yeshivat Marat will celebrate the ordination as clergy of its first three graduates, the RCA reasserts its position as articulated in 2010, and they resolve, and then in 2015, they had this resolution saying that members of the RCA may not ordain women or appoint them to rabbinic positions in Orthodox institutions. The resolution did not concern or address non-rabbinic positions such as Yuatzot Halakha, community scholars, Yeshiva University's GPATs, and non-rabbinic school teachers. Notably, no similar resolution was passed regarding women's tefillah groups in synagogues, highlighting discussion about women's tefillah groups took place in the 1980s, and they had the letter from the five YUS yeshiva prohibiting it, saying that it's forbidden, but there was no resolution from the RCA. But here, there was a resolution. Another related institution was the International Beis Din, founded in 2013 to address the problem of agunot through more proactive halakhic solutions. It became controversial, and leading poskim such as Rav Herschel Schachter and others issued strong public objections. Schachter wrote a letter he wrote a letter in 2015, and he writes that I encourage my colleagues and students not to rely on any ruling from this basin because they have no standing. This letter was signed by Rav Schachter, and it was agreed to by Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, Rav Nata Greenblatt, Rav Avram Union, and Rav Menachem Mendel Senderovich. From my perspective, I don't believe that the mainstream modern Orthodox community necessarily relies on the rulings of the international basin. Of course, at the same time this is going on, more and more RCA rabbis now insist on a halachic prenup as a condition to officiating at a wedding. The halachic prenup agreement developed under the leadership of Mordechai Willig in the Basin of America and was introduced in the early 1990s and began to be widely implemented in the Orthodox community shortly thereafter. The central innovation is a legally binding financial commitment made at the time of marriage, in which the husband agrees to provide ongoing financial support to his wife at a specified daily rate in the event of a separation until a halachic get is granted. Because this obligation is enforceable in civil court as a standard contractual debt, it creates a strong incentive for timely issuance of a get without relying on halachic coercion, which would otherwise invalidate the divorce. At the same time, preserve the halachic requirement that a get must be given of the husband's free will, since the pressure is framed as a fulfillment of a pre-agreed financial obligation rather than direct religious compulsion. And again, this has been widely endorsed by major Orthodox rabbinic organizations, including the RCA, and as I mentioned, has become a standard practice in many modern Orthodox weddings, significantly reducing the risk of get refusal and thereby helping to prevent cases of agunot. What we've seen since the 1960s, starting with the debates between Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and Rabbi Yitz Greenberg over the soul of modern Orthodoxy, especially after Rabbi Yitz Greenberg moved to the margins, is not a straight shift in one direction. It's an ongoing struggle to give structure to different and often competing goals within Orthodoxy. Out of that struggle came a range of organizations and institutions: Eda, Jofa, Yeshivat Chovei Torah, Yeshivat Marat, the IRF, and the International Beis Din. Each of them, in different ways, tried to expand what could be done within an Orthodox framework while still staying inside its boundaries. At the same time, many of their ideas and practices were not accepted by the mainstream Orthodox community. A key question running through all of this is whether pushing harder for change actually creates more openness, or whether it backfires and leads to more resistance. For example, did pushing for women's clergy make it more acceptable for women to study Gemara, or did it make people more suspicious of that too? Did partnership minyanim help normalize greater roles for women in synagogue life, or did they make people more resistant, even to smaller changes like women reading Megillah or taking part in Simchat Torah celebrations? Seems to me that both are true. Interestingly, there does seem to be less anxiety today about engaging with non-Orthodox movements. That may not be because the disagreements disappeared, but because the boundaries now feel clearer and more stable, so there's less fear of internal spillover. If we zoom out further, we see a longer historical pattern. In the early 20th century, rabbis were often focused on keeping Jews connected to Orthodoxy, even if they were not fully observant. Later, as conservative Judaism developed as a separate movement, Orthodoxy responded by drawing clearer lines around what counted as acceptable belief and practice. That leaves modern Orthodoxy in a constant tension. It tries to do two things at once: stay fully committed to halacha, and stay deeply engaged with the modern world and broader Jewish society. Those two goals often pull in different directions. Some responses lean more to the right, emphasizing caution and stronger boundaries. Others lean more to the left, trying to expand inclusion and participation while still working within halacha. Many others try to hold the center and manage both goals at the same time. And this may be the key point. Modern Orthodoxy is not defined by choosing one side over the other. It is defined by living with the tension between them. It doesn't fully resolve the conflict between openness and boundaries. It keeps both in play at the same time. That is the ongoing challenge of the modern Orthodox rabbinate: to stay committed to halacha while still engaging the wider world, and to keep clear boundaries without becoming closed off. It is not a system that eliminates tension, but one that continually manages it.